Hello, everyone. This is Tom Uren, author of Seriously Risky Business, and I'm here for another Between Two Nerds discussion with the Gruck. G'day, Gruck. How are you today?
I am all good, sir. How are you?
Great. Today's episode of Between Two Nerds is sponsored by Grey Noise, who turns the chatter and noise of the internet into intelligence that you can actually use. I'd also like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation for its support. So what we're going to talk about is the ethics or the rights and wrongs of different types of intelligence. So I thought we'd start at the very top level, which is state on state. You've got state on, say, organization or company.
Right.
And sort of spoiler alert, we're going to talk about intellectual property theft. That's where we're going to end up. And so starting with state versus state, it seems that everyone agrees that this is a thing that goes on and it's just the done thing and it's fine. Do you think there's any argument that it's not fine? What would you say if someone said it shouldn't be allowed?
So I think that there's nuance, surprisingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we sort of accept that it is done, right? Like it's going to happen. But I think where it gets from acceptable into kind of not is when there's a massive mismatch between the two states. Like not all states are created equal, right? Like some are small, some are big, some are rich, some are poor, et cetera, et cetera. And when the purpose is not security related, like it's not a matter of national security. So for example, if you have Australia is spying on one of their smaller neighbors and it's to make sure that there's no terrorist activity, there's no planned invasions, there's, you know, sort of state security type stuff, like that's completely legitimate. If, on the other hand, they were doing it because they wanted to screw over the smaller state during treaty negotiations to benefit an Australian company that, you know, was tied to the government. Hypothetically speaking, I mean, I know you guys would never do something that dodgy. Right? Like that's...
So there's an entire Between Two Nerds discussion about that. So that was BTN 15. We talked about that example where the allegation is that Australia spied on East Timor to benefit itself, an oil field treaty.
Right.
So I thought that when we discussed that, we decided it was kind of the, and I think this is where you're heading to, it was the purpose that you use it for. So, you know, the spying itself was probably fine. It was that Australia used it to try and benefit itself, allegedly.
Right. Economically, I think that's the, because that's going to be, spoiler alert, that's going to link into the IP stuff. That's where I think that's not really, like, that's not right. Like that just feels wrong.
Yeah. And one argument that I've heard somewhere is that espionage between states is a public good to some extent, in that the theory there is that if states are better informed about each other's intentions, they're less likely to end up in a terrible war, for example.
Right. So I actually believe that, but I think it's... Right.
Well, maybe you were the one who told me.
I believe I am. I brought it up about India and China, and that they don't actually do enough spying on each other, which leads to the fear that they will misinterpret public statements on face value rather than knowing sort of true intentions. And so that the spying is actually de-escalatory in that situation, and that it allows them to respond to what's really going on as opposed to what's being said for a domestic audience. So there is that. And I think that there's a lot of ways of using spying that are security, stability related without being just, are they planning an invasion? Yes or no?
Right, right. So the counterexample would be intelligence that allows you to think that you're going to strike a killer blow and will be able to invade with no problem, right? So that would be the example where intelligence probably makes things worse. But as a rule, you think probably most of the time it's the other.
Right, right. My guess is quite honestly that anyone who develops intelligence that tells them they can do a a killer blow. The war will be over by Christmas. You know, just one hard punch and we win. I think that the intelligence is a means to an end at that sort of point. Like you've kind of decided this is a thing you want to do. And the intelligence would be a go, but it won't be a no-go. Like you can't be like, right. Oh, the intelligence says that this is wrong. You'll just go, well, you know, what do those guys know anyway? They don't have a real feel for the country. I mean, I went there on my gap year in 2001, and I had one of the best weeks of my life. So I really understand, you know, this country in depth.
I think that in decades to come, we might learn more about the Russian approach to Ukraine and what their intelligence told them and learn more about this. But for right now, it's kind of moot. So overall, yeah. We think state on state is fine. May even on balance be a good thing in terms of stability. The the example that occurred to me is that in the Cold War in particular, the US spent a lot of time and effort making sure that Russia understood its nuclear posture. So that wasn't spying, obviously, but there was a value in the other side knowing this is what we think, this is how we'll respond. So it's an example where both sides recognize that at a high level, that it was worth sharing information. Understanding was good.
Some dialogue is necessary.
Okay, so one of the recent examples of state-on-state espionage is the Chinese were caught hacking the US State Department and Commerce Department in this recent Microsoft cloud compromise. One question I heard on a different podcast was why the US had not responded very strongly and sort of denounced the Chinese. And I guess my answer would be, I think both sides would expect that this type of espionage goes on. I think it would be just hypocritical to call out the Chinese for something that you would do yourself, right?
Right. But I mean, part of it, the other thing is like, you need to reserve your moral outrage for things that are actually generally considered morally wrong.
Okay. So that sounds like a perfect segue. So for many, many years now, the Chinese state has been stealing intellectual property from all sorts of different people. And the US position, and I think it's probably broader than the US position, but it's certainly held by the US, is that that's just not on. There's a certain tone of moral outrage there. So is state-sponsored intellectual property theft, is that unethical? Is it evil? Should there be any universal prohibition against it?
It is literally a pact with the devil. Right. Now, so here's the thing. It's nuanced, right? So I think, again, the target matters, right? So if you are, I don't know, building green technology, right? Like you make the blades for wind turbines, you are probably not expecting yourself to be in the crosshairs for state-sponsored espionage, right? Like that's not part of your threat model. And I would say arguably it shouldn't be. You should not be in the firing line. But you can understand how China would maybe want to steal that technology and bring it onshore rather than having it, you know, an external thing. I don't think that that's okay. Like I think that sort of intellectual property theft is on the wrong side. Like it might be borderline, but it's definitely on the wrong side.
Okay, I'll step back. And the formulation that the US has used is theft of intellectual property to benefit commercial interests.
Right.
And so
like oil fields, for example.
Yeah. Well, there's a distinction between an economy and a company. And
is there though?
Well,
in Huawei, right?
Or I think this is what the US argument would be.
Right. Okay.
If you're giving material to companies just so your companies should do better, and I think this is interesting, right? If you're doing that, you're benefiting them commercially. They're making more money, and the business of America is business, and so this is terrible because it cuts against, you know, the core interests of the US state, which is to have rich companies.
Right.
But there's a different type of espionage, say trade negotiations between two countries, which seems like that's in scope for the US. If you're negotiating with other government people, that's fine.
Oh, absolutely.
But then it's a very blurry line because those trade negotiations, I mean, the whole point is to ultimately benefit your economy, which is nothing but a whole lot of companies and people, right?
Right. Like, personally, I think it's massively hypocritical, but I might be alone on that one.
So intellectual property theft is kind of the other way around, right? Instead of working from the top down, you're working from the company to the economy upwards.
Well, I think it's worth considering that there's like other examples as well, right? Like, so the Chinese jet fighters that happen to be very close copies of things from like Raytheon and Boeing and, you know, all that.
Yep.
That's obviously intellectual property theft, but it's defense contractors who quite honestly know that they're in scope, right? Similarly, I think RSA, right? Because if we're talking about like the Lockheed hack back in, when was it, 2012, 13, 14? Like a decade ago, right? That big hack, which was enabled by a hack on RSA to get the seeds for their like login things. RSA was in scope. Like, I don't think that was crossing the line. That is a completely legitimate, if you're RSA and you're providing security for, you know,
the defense industrial base,
then yeah, you're going to get targeted. I mean, how could you not be?
And so in that case, it's fine because...
Yeah, like they're so close to the state in yeah. that, you know, like the military industrial complex, it has state capture.
Yep.
Quite frankly, it's so closely integrated to national security and so on that it falls under the, like the rubric of like national security exemption for it's okay.
I also think that the whole point of hacking them is to develop your own military, mm-hmm. right? And so that's clearly...
Look, if you say that like hacking Raytheon to get information is wrong, then you may as well say that like all of the CIA theft of, for example, the manuals for ballistic missiles, like that's mm-hmm. equally as wrong, right? Like that's the sort of thing that gives you insight into how they work and like what's going on. And like,
yep.
that's an unfair competitive advantage. And it's going to mean that, you know, the Minutemen are not going to be built by, you know, a Russian company that bids for a tender because their intellectual property has been stolen.
I think there's also an element in those examples where, particularly in the past, maybe less so now, those companies were not selling to the same market.
Yeah.
So it's not as if stealing Raytheon intellectual property actually resulted in much loss of sales. I mean, the Chinese right. military companies are selling to different customers, right?
Yeah, like I think one of their small arms manufacturers is like Norinco, right? And I don't think that they're doing a lot of bidding against Colt, and there's a sort of this head-to-head butting of like who can steal intellectual property to like get a better tender or yeah.
So there's that, and there's also that's not the main point either. It's about your own military,
right? It's competition,
right? So that's totally fine.
I think that's a very clear exception to like the IP theft is wrong thing. It's like if it's military defense stuff, it's not. It's straight up like this is real in scope. It's fair, but then where it starts getting a little bit hazy, like it's the subcontractors to the defense contractors and like the suppliers and like the plus ones and stuff, like how far down the stack can you go before, you know, you're no longer looking at something directly connected to the defense industrial complex. You're looking at a ball bearing manufacturing plant that just makes generic ball bearings, and like is that in scope? And ball bearings being a poor example in this case because it's probably not a massive secret, but there's probably things of like, well, you know, to make a jet engine, there's like material science, right? Having yep. having blades that spin at whatever bajillion RPMs generates a certain amount of heat. Steel can't handle it. You need to do some material science to get particular alloys and blah, blah, blah. That's going to be done not necessarily in-house, but maybe by a subcontractor who specializes in
right,
just
yeah.
doing
so
that.
Another example, which is a bit more commercial, is the Chinese... I think just in the last couple of months, they flew their own indigenous, I think it's a wide-body commercial airliner. And the story is that they did a whole lot of hacking to get technology for different parts of that airliner. There's a CrowdStrike report that you can find. It's a fan of your work, I think, and it talks mm-hmm. about compromises of, I think it was Safran, which is a turbojet manufacturer.
Right.
And so in that case, the plan for the Chinese seems to have been to benefit their commercial industry. COMAC
right.
is the aircraft manufacturer. So what's the verdict there? So it's not related to the military industrial base. It's commercial airliners.
But it's also dual use, right? Which is, I think that's a sort of complicating factor. It's like, if you know how to make a good jet engine for a commercial airliner, you probably know how to make a good jet engine for a military cargo transport. I don't think that those are completely separate things. So my feel there is that, God, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I don't think it's that wrong to steal from super rich companies. I have a really hard time feeling sympathetic for them.
Well, so my view is that the US and China are in very different positions, or at least were in very different positions economically and in terms of development.
They still are. I mean, the Chinese, the average income is like 11,000 and the US is like 66 or 70.
Yeah. So I think it totally made sense for the Chinese to steal intellectual property in terms of building their economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
From just a rational point of view, if you want a better economy, more developed companies which can do more advanced things, mm-hmm. sure. I mean, it seems like stealing it is an option, right? And to be clear, the Chinese didn't just steal intellectual property. They had a whole range of measures to try and improve their economy. So it was
right.
Additive. But if you're in the US position, what's the gain? Probably relatively little, right? So I think there's a asymmetry in the interests because of the position, right?
Right. And if you look at the arguments about copyright, you'll see sort of a lot of claims, which I don't know if they're true or not, but they feel right about how when the US was a very small power and the British were very big, the US printers would just take books from Britain and reprint them and sell them and be like, well, you know, what are you going to do? Sue us, you know? And then when the US got to be big enough that they were now exporting things as opposed to importing and reprinting, then suddenly protections for intellectual property became a big deal.
Yeah, so I think there's a sort of positional argument that it depends who you are. Now, I think there's a universal argument that sort of makes sense that mm-hmm. intellectual property theft is bad, and it's kind of the reason that we have the patent system. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you want to encourage innovation.
Right.
And so if everyone just steals intellectual property from everyone else willy-nilly, there's kind of no incentive to invest in any new technology because you'll never make any money out of it because it'll get stolen. So that's a argument from the point of view of humanity rather than from the point of view of China or the US.
Okay, so I have an excellent example to bring up with that of how things work without patent systems. So during the medieval period, or slightly after the early Renaissance, there were some armorers who developed leg armor for horses. Now, a horse's leg is all weird and stuff, right? Like, it's got bends and, like, you can't train it to do a specific thing with leg armor. You can't be like, okay, well, when you're wearing armor, you have to be aware that your range of mobility is limited in these ways. And so there were some people who did this, but it was massively secret, right? So that basically there'd be like some super advanced armorer who'd figured it out and who had made something, and he would sell it to the count or the king or a prince or whatever with the proviso that they would get like two of them, and they weren't allowed to take it out of the armory except during war, like all of the stuff to keep it secret. People weren't allowed to visit it and see it, right? Like, it had to be kept in storage. And as a result, we only know that they exist from documentary sources. Like, we don't have any examples because they were so rare because of this secrecy. And so you know, like what happens when there aren't patents is like things still get invented, but then they get kept secret and used sort of rarely. And it sort of ends up being, you know, as you said, like it's bad for humanity, but it's particularly bad because you know they figured it out, you know it was done. You just don't know how.
And it never became widespread, I guess.
Right, exactly.
And so for humanity as a whole, it's a net loss.
Right.
And I think we're in this space right now where people still innovate. I heard someone say that their approach was that they expected the innovation to be stolen, but they just kept on, I guess, like Alice in Wonderland, running very, very fast just to stay ahead of the thievery.
Right.
And so it was a constant race to stay ahead of what was being stolen.
Right. Well, I was going to say, like, in security, we are absolutely, we're used to things where as soon as someone figures out how something works, it gets fixed. Right. If you think of ODAY as intellectual property and you mm-hmm. try and keep it secret and sort of very rarely used and it's special, and then if it gets out, then everyone finds out about it and it stops working so well and it gets abused and all this stuff. So, you know, we're very aware of those dynamics.
Yeah. So kind of writ large, universally, we'd probably be better off if intellectual property wasn't stolen. But for each individual country, they could potentially be better off if they just went hell for leather stealing stuff.
Right.
And I don't know that I've ever heard the US make that argument that we don't like intellectual property theft because it's bad for humanity. I frankly don't think it's a very convincing argument either.
Right. It's hard to say that blanket IP theft is bad because, as we've said, like there's cases where that's not true, where, you know, for like defense contractors in particular. I think it's the, like, if you're stealing to enrich yourself, even when, like, by yourself, we just mean companies that exist in your economy. When you're stealing to enrich yourself, that's when it sort of gets wrong. That's when it just seems not quite right. But I think there's a Robin Hood angle as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to say, I think the argument for that is that if you're, well, we'll just use China because we've been talking about them, but anyone mm-hmm. in a similar situation, if your country is relatively poor, and I guess in China's case, you know, in the 1800s, the UK was pushing opium on them. They've been invaded several times. I think there's an element of, well, why not steal stuff to try and like you're not making your people rich, you're just making them less poor.
Right, not starving to death in the street anymore, basically. That's which is, you know, in terms of net good for humanity, there's an argument to be made there that, you know, bringing China's millions out of poverty is maybe a greater net good for humanity than adding a few million to some company's bottom line.
Okay, so we've come across the answer then, and the answer is that when there's vast disparities in wealth, intellectual property theft's fine. When everyone is relatively well off, we should just stop it, because then that would encourage innovation for all of humanity, and wouldn't that be a wonderful world to live in? I at one point had thought that as China developed, it would actually kind of change its attitude to intellectual property theft, and that once it had more to lose, it would stop, because it's really about your relative position
in terms of
what you have and what you have to lose. And so I guess that's a testable prediction.
There we go. There's a tipping point of intellectual property. There's a sort of seesaw thing of, like, as soon as you've pulled enough stuff from the other side and you start, like, going up, then suddenly it's like, whoa.
You know, suddenly you realize stuff going on. Yeah.
now that I'm rich, I realize that theft is wrong.
That's right, yeah. Thanks a lot, Croc.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Talk to you next time.